Good evening, White Sox fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Future Sox MLB-centric podcast known as Hot Takes and Heaters. My name is Danny Miller. My co-host, as always, is the young gentleman known as Jacob Thome. How are you doing tonight, Jake?
We're doing good. We're doing good. Hang in there. It's finally getting colder. As a big man, I enjoy that very much.
Yeah. you know what? I also happen to be a big guy. And, you know, I'm the older I get, the less I am as a fan of the cold. But I don't mind it either. So I'm just a guy who prefers the summer months. I like to be outside more when it's, you know, tolerable temperatures, if you will.
I mean, this is your baseball guy.
What's that?
Maybe it's because you're a baseball guy.
I mean, I think it's just who I am in general. I lived in Florida for 6 years, so I kind of got used to the heat then. And then, you know, we like to vacation in tropical areas as well, often too. So don't get me wrong, though. I am not one to, die in sweltering heat either. So, you know, even when it's warm, I like to have a little bit of relief from like a pool or some really good AC, but, I digress, you know? So there's some things going on this week in, the world of the White Sox. You know, now that the, off season is official and yeah, Ian says the cold can kick rocks.
Nope, give me snow.
That's pretty funny.
Give me a blizzard.
You know what? I don't mind either. as long as, you know, again, I got somewhere where I can go to either cool off or warm up, whatever the case may be. But, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, I think we should probably talk more about some baseball since the World Series is over. And, man, dude, what a series that was, huh?
What a playoffs. I mean, all of the playoffs were amazing. And then you get to the World Series. It's funny. Saturday, I'm driving home from Peoria. Shout out the Lions, who handily kicked MacArthur's butt. And I'm getting notifications throughout the game, and I'm like, all right, it's 3-1. Not a huge deal. Not worried about it. And then it's 3-3, and I'm like, all right, well, now I got to – or I think it was 4-3 when I turned it on. And I was like, all right, I got to turn it on. So I watched that in between buffering on the way back from Peoria, and yeah, what a game.
Yeah, man. I mean, it was just an exciting playoffs. And before we get into White Sox stuff, I have a question for you because I saw this come up a lot during the playoffs in general, but even more so during the World Series as we had a couple of extra inning games during the World Series. And there was a lot of talk about the ghost runner, right? And the what, you know, we want to call the commissioner's rule, if you will, with the guy starting on second base and extra innings and the lag thereof during postseason, right? And I wanted to kind of pick your brain and see what you thought about, you know, what's your feelings on like 18 inning games like we had during the World Series?
Love it. Absolutely love it. As much baseball as possible. It's the playoffs. I would just – I think it sucks if one team stuck with, like, Pete Alonso on second base and one team stuck with, like, I don't know, some speedy outfielder. I think it adds a weird wrinkle to the game. It's the playoffs. I don't mind it for regular season stuff. I would prefer that the 10th and the 11th are normal, and then after the 11th, if you want to use the ghost runner, fine.
Okay, I can work with
that's my opinion on that. But no, 18 inning games, give me it, love it.
See, I'm of the thought don't want to. I'm honestly just done with the man on second in extras in general. It's a rule. I've talked about this in the past in shows, and I'm going to bring it up again. But it's one of those rules that I feel like it favors the away team, which to me is already wrong. I mean, when you talk about home field advantage, whether or not there is home field advantage, there is definitely some statistics that kind of say there is a home field advantage. Obviously, playing half of your games in the same stadium as opposed to just a handful of games here and there throughout the year. But I feel like it just favors the away team by putting a man on and possibly getting that run in before the home team ever gets a chance, and it puts more pressure on the home team to do so. I get that everybody gets an equal opportunity, but and then the other thing for me is every pitch in an extra inning game potentially becomes a game-winning moment, right? There's a lot of folks out there that think baseball is struggling with its viewership and its fans, you know, and being able to recruit new fans because there just isn't enough excitement at times. And, you know, the attention level and attention span and being able to bring in people in the age of like immediate dividends, right? We all want things to come to fruition as quickly as possible. It's just the way the world is these days. I personally, as a baseball, and I hate to want to sound like a, you know, a purist, I'm okay with change most of the time, but in baseball, I believe that every pitch now is actually more exciting than any pitch during the regular, you know, 9-inning game. They just hold more weight at that particular moment of the game. And especially in the playoffs, as we saw, I mean, there were multiple opportunities in those extra inning games where, you know, I don't have a dog or a horse in the race, right? When we're looking at the Jays and the Dodgers, and I still was like glued to my TV at the edge of my seat in a bunch of those situations where, you know, guys got out of it. And, you know, the game continued on. And I would rather see that. And I'd rather see 18-inning games and deal with it as part of, you know, 162-game season rather than, you know, let's just try to get things ended quickly. So that's just my two cents, and I wanted to bring it up. So,
yeah, I enjoyed the extras. Crazy news. That's an interesting hire.
Yeah, Baseball Toss just posted in the chat, just for those of you who are listening to the recorded version, that Bruce Bochy is nearing a deal to return to the Giants as a special assistant, and that's per The Athletic. So thank you for jumping in on that, Toss. We appreciate you. But, yeah, that is definitely – it's definitely interesting, to say the least.
What were your thoughts on Vitello getting hired, coming straight from college and into the MLB? That was wicked. And if you're gonna, I mean, that was the move they had to make, in my opinion, was they had to bring in a guy who had done it before.
Yeah, I'm good with it, and I think, you know, it's probably one of those things where you might start seeing a little bit more of that mentality here. I think, you know, there's just the winds of change are approaching. I think more and more folks are kind of we're becoming more adept to those kinds of hires. I believe, I think baseball, you know, analytically is kind of passing some of these other folks by. And I think we're going to see a younger and even maybe even less experienced, but with a different approach type of hires across the league as a whole. What are your thoughts on it, Jake?
Yeah, kind of the same thing. I mean, as we go into more analytics, it's just going to be about, you know, what managers can manage. I mean, obviously the college game and the major league game are totally different things. But, I mean, if you have to bring along one of these former managers, I mean, Bochy's kind of crazy. But I kind of thought he was going to go back to retirement. I wonder if there was – I mean, probably Posey had gotten out there pretty quick, but obviously I know, you know, him and Venable have clear relations. I mean, they were just working together 2 years ago. So, but yeah, obviously Posey being a former coach under him, I would assume that there was a bigger connection there than his with Venable. I don't know where he'd fit in here either. Obviously there's not really a spot, but
no. And you know, it's It's one of the things that we're going to talk about tonight is some of the new White Sox hires in the organization. And those guys are, you know, kind of on the younger scale and don't have a ton of experience, but do have some successes under their belt to date. So we'll get into that a little bit more as the show progresses. But I do want to talk a little bit about the Lou Bob option being picked up. And I think we'll kind of focus on that for now. We'll get into the coaching hires a little bit. I saw Toss asked about it, and we definitely will touch on all of that. And then if we got a little bit of time, we'll probably I would like to look into the subject of the international market a little bit more. I think we'll probably do it really in depth one of these days in the next couple of weeks. But we can talk a little bit about a couple of guys because, John Morosi came out with an article earlier today that I found interesting. That the reason I say it's interesting is there's a ton of names on the international market that actually makes sense to post this year, specifically in the Asian international market, Korea and Japan. So we talked a little bit about Munetaka Amirakami the last couple of weeks, but I want to touch on a couple other names, and I'm probably catching a little off guard because I didn't warn you about any of this, but I just want to throw a couple of names out there. But if you guys are listening, I do implore you to check out the article by Morosi from earlier today, Wednesday the 5th, and just give it a look. There's quite a few interesting names out there, and it's gonna be interesting to see who posts and who actually makes it over here and to what teams they go to. So, including some American-born players and former MLB players trying to make their way back into the MLB. So, we'll maybe touch on that a little bit later. But, dude, Luis Robert Jr., they did not waste any time in picking up his $20 million option when the postseason was officially started. We kind of speculated on whether or not that was going to happen. I even waffled a little bit back and forth on whether or not I thought it should happen, but what are your thoughts on this whole situation, dude?
Yeah, I as soon as they didn't trade him, I knew he was coming back. I mean, obviously the quotes that come out after it, he's a big piece of the future. There's now rumors that he's being shopped, which don't necessarily surprise me. I would be shocked, though, if he was traded. I genuinely think he's here for the future. That's what the White Sox view him as a future piece. The other, quirk in this whole thing is the Sox don't have a center fielder in the pipeline. I'm trying to think of the dude. Hauser trade. Was it the Hauser? No, not the Hauser trade. There was another former Rays pro. Drew Baker, is that – I feel like that's the wrong name. Who's a center fielder prospect in the Rays organization who had kind of flamed out, but like that is legitimately it for center field prospects in your organization. I understand there's some talk about Braden being a center fielder. I don't see it. I think he's a right fielder and a corner guy. I think his arm plays better in right. And I think the speed is going to be too big of an issue for him in center. So I think he's a right fielder and we'll see what Luis gives you. There was a stretch there post All-Star break. I think he hit 301 post All-Star break. The walks were a lot better this year.
It was 298, but either way, we're right in the area of 300. Yeah.
So, the hitting was a lot better in the second half. It had cooled down the couple of weeks before he got injured, but I don't know. I mean, the potential is still there. 2023 Luis Robert is legitimately in there somewhere. Maybe not in the power category. I still think he can be a 30 home run guy for you. But the base stealing, the walking, and certainly the defense are definitely still there.
Yeah. Elite level defender, right? And I'm going to put this, comment in the chat up on the screen a little bit ago, but I'm going to put it up again. Wolf Larson comes in and says that he's assuming that the White Sox are structuring Robert's fitness and recovery program for the off season. And I'm glad you brought that up because it has actually been reported that Robert is down in Florida currently. And he is working on, he's spending a lot of time with his hitting instructor, his off-season hitting instructor, working on his swing and some other things and trying to, you know, make sure that he stays productive in that area. Like you mentioned, he did have a pretty good second half last year. But the big thing I want to touch on is what you also mentioned was the stolen bases. 33 stolen bases last year is a career high for a season for Luis Robert Jr. And, you know, keep in mind that that was also done in a year where he had had hamstring issues not once but twice, right? Now, obviously, the second hamstring injury put him out for the, you know, it was towards the end of August. I want to say like the 26th or the 28th of August or whatever. So, but he missed the rest of the season. Their Sox were talking about him possibly being able to come back right at the end. But I think in the, you know, in the grand scheme of things, they were like, why bother? You know, it's only a handful of games. It's not going to really improve our position in the division. Let's give him the opportunity to rest and get fully healed up and see what these kids can continue to do, especially since they were making such a great push in the second half. But even after having that same hammy that keeps aggravating, you know, year in and year out for Luis Robert, he still produced 33 stolen bases, you know, and he missed over a month at the end of the season. So, you know, now he says he's feeling 100%. And there have been whispers that there's been even more moves for the White Sox in the biomechanical department and strength and conditioning. So I don't know if there's been new hires or if they've got a new organization they're working with. Guys are working with their off-season programs. I'm kind of waiting to hear a little bit more, but I have had a contact tell me that they are, in particular, looking at limiting more of these injuries, and I should say just limiting injuries in general, and looking for a better way to have guys be in shape and ready to go for the season so that this kind of thing doesn't continue to happen. So it's difficult to say that Luis Robert Jr.'s option is going to pay off. But at the same time, I think you're right. I think the moment they traded him, it was pretty much a done deal. Or they didn't trade him, I should say. It was pretty much a done deal that he was going to come back. And the rumors about him being shopped at this particular moment are probably true. It's just whether or not you're going to get somebody to take a chance on him at $20 million. I think it would have been difficult to get somebody to take a chance at him at the beginning of last year at $15 million, being one of the, you know, highest paid center fielders in baseball at the time. And you and I have talked about this on the show a little bit. The two highest paid center fielders in baseball last year weren't even playing center field anymore. Right. Yeah. So I think it put Luis Robert Jr. at, he was the top paid center fielder in baseball.
Yes.
So unfortunately with his history, it's going to be very difficult to find a trade partner unless there's a package deal or the White Sox eat part of that contract. So we'll see how that goes. But if he's here come spring, I believe there's an opportunity for him to be healthier than in the past. And it sounds like his off-season program is already underway. So, you know, we'll see. Maybe we'll see good things out of him. Maybe we won't. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd bet on some sort of bounce back from him.
Do you think there's a viable chance that he's healthy? I mean, neither one of us are doctors. I know that's kind of a loaded question, but do you think there's a chance that this guy ever really figures it out without hurting himself?
I mean, maybe his hamstrings are uneven, right? I mean, that's like a legit thing. I mean, maybe there's a medical breakthrough. It could happen. I mean, I'm being so serious when I say, you know, like there's been a breakthrough in this guy the last couple of years of like people's hamstrings being uneven and tearing hamstrings. So maybe that's the issue.
You know, Uncle Ted says, does he want to play? That's the question. He wanted to play. There was legitimate effort out of Luis Robert, and I think that's a credit to Will Venable. Like, there's legit want. He just has to be healthy. The question is he going to be healthy? I have no idea, but I think it's worth riding out for a year. I mean, that month before he got hurt, he was legitimately one of – not one of – he was the best center fielder in baseball. That I won't say that month, but there was a stretch there post All-Star break where he was the best center fielder in baseball for about a month. He had like a 988 OPS and obviously was putting up some crazy numbers. So, I mean, it's there. You just have to, I mean, the center field is such a weak position across baseball. There's not a ton of guys that are raking at and playing defense at an elite level in baseball.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is I feel like it showed that he was playing with more heart than he had in a few seasons, right? At least more than he played more with in 2024. 2024, he looked like he was going through the motions when he was even on the field because, you know, he missed a lot of time then too. But There was the change of philosophy under Will Venable as well. I don't think Will Venable was going to tolerate a guy who wasn't going to come out and put forth a solid effort day in and day out, right? I think Will Venable's initial goal with this White Sox team was to instill a better work ethic than they'd had over the last couple of seasons. You know, we if you go back to the Pedro years, where they were literally openly telling guys and telling the fans and the world alike that we're telling guys not to go 100% if they're not feeling 100%. You know, the idea that, oh, well, you're not going to beat out a ground ball, so don't bust it down the line. But there were situations where they should have been busting it down the line and they still weren't. And I think when you put that sort of philosophy out there to a ball club, it probably gets taken advantage a little bit, right? You know, they always say you play how you practice. Well, I think that starts mentally as well. You play how your mental state is. And if your mental state is I can dog it on certain situations, you're probably going to dog it more often than you need to. And I think Will Venable changed that entire philosophy. And I think it showed all of last season. So I don't believe that that's going to be an issue for Luis Robert Jr. It obviously wasn't an issue for him the second half. He looked like a different guy. You know, he looked like he was finally healthy and feeling good. So, I don't know how I feel about, again, the $20 million that's a big chunk of money. That is definitely 100% going to make him the highest paid center fielder in baseball, probably by a lot this season. I think your next closest guy is going to be in the neighborhood of about 12. So
the next guy I'm pretty sure is Julio, and we'll see what Grisham gets. The next highest is Young Ho Lee. That's right. We just talked about it at 18.
Toss brings up just to go with my point, he brings up in the chat. Never forget when Pedro told Colas to play with less energy, and that happened. You know what I mean? Those kinds of things happen, and it's a good, you know, we're hearing a lot of the same stuff like around the Bears right now. You know, if you're a Bears fan, and as I assume a lot of our listeners are, I know Ian is a cheesehead, if you're a Bears fan, if you're paying attention to the NFL at all, you don't even have to be a Bears fan, especially in Chicago. You're hearing about the Ben Johnson effect, right? And I think the Will Venable effect is very similar with the White Sox, and I'll leave it at that. I just feel like there's a shift in culture, not just around the manager, but the organization as a whole and what Getz is trying to do with the organization. I think these new coaching hires are going to prove that is even more of a thing with these guys, is that there's a cultural change that's happening. And I know that a lot of folks you know, jumped on the fact that, you know, one of these new coaches, we've got more guys coming in from Kansas City, right? And I thought we were done with this. We went from the whole, you know, Chris Getz and his connections to Kansas City, and we were done with this and blah, 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 blah. But if we look at what's going on with Showman and Bove, I think, you know, we'll delve into that here. We might as well just go ahead and get into it. I think we've pretty much beaten the Lewis Robert thing into the ground for now. But if we look at what is happening with these two coaches, I think that's just going to prove even more that this is a full-on shift. And I guess we'll just start that conversation. And I'll start it by saying that, yes, one of those two guys came from Kansas City and has connections, but it was not during the Chris Getz era. And the other thing is these guys are younger and have a little bit less experience, but there was an interview process. They were not the only ones. I don't know the other names. I haven't gotten that information yet, but there was an interview process. These guys got the jobs through their own merits and experience and apparently interviewed well. And now Will Venable is getting to have his say in the coaches that he has around him. And let's just go ahead and go with that. So why don't we start with Showman? What are your thoughts on hiring Showman for the White Sox?
Yeah, he's an interesting one, right? I think a lot of people see Marlins assistant hitting coach and puke. but, you know, I think he's a one of these guys. You know, the White Sox are in a weird situation because I'm not saying that this doesn't exist in other organizations, but it definitely didn't, you know, in everybody, where they really, you know, their hitting coach, their major league hitting coach is not the top guy. That's Ryan Fuller. And so you're looking for a guy who can implement Ryan Fuller's strategies, kind of work with the hitters through Ryan Fuller. And so, you know, there are two guys here. Neither of them have pitched, I believe, higher than like high school, maybe college, but I know neither of them, I think, have played any affiliate ball. They're both very young. I like both of the signings, though. I mean, hold on.
Well, so my thought is yeah, Marlins hitting coach, right? And it did see when you said to puke, I did see somebody in the chat say that they actually did puke when that happened. But I'll say this. So yeah, he obviously Miami, you go, okay, it's not awesome, right? But he came from the Twins organization as like a low system hitting coordinator, assistant hitting coach or something. And it was during a time when, like, you know, some people will say, well, that there was a collapse during that reign in Minnesota in like the early 20s. Right. But he worked under Popkins when he was with Minnesota, and Popkins was kind of run out of town over there. David Popkins was kind of run out of town over there, but you know where David Popkins is right now? Does the name sound familiar to you?
Yeah.
David Popkins.
Toronto's hitting coach.
Is Toronto's hitting coach. And he has been absolutely adored in Toronto because they're saying he's had something to do with their turnaround. So I don't know. Take that as with a grain of salt, but you know, that's who he was working under in Minnesota. And they really seem to love him. And he had an opportunity to go somewhere else. I think it was, God, was it Baltimore? He was actually had an opportunity to work with Fuller somewhere else. And yeah, he ended up going to Miami. But he's got some pedigree in him that shows that his philosophies might actually help. And I don't know. He's a guy that I think can, like I said, he was given an opportunity to interview and was given the position under his own merits. So that says something to me, especially, you know, a lot of folks are going to look at this and say, well, you know, it doesn't really show much.
Yeah.
And we can say, well, you know, he came from Miami and it's not really the greatest thing, but you know, he also turned, that young kid into a 35 home run hitter. What was his name?
Stowers.
Thank you. God, it was.
By the way, took a break here, so I'm looking him up, kind of getting a background. Huge shout out, Derek Shaman, a former University of Illinois Springfield Prairie star.
Yes,
which is the team that I cover, do play by play for. So that was a crazy, crazy coincidence. Just texted my SID and was like, "Hey, there's some." Just crazy, crazy connection. But yeah, no. I mean,
yeah, he's got local ties other than that, yeah, too. It was also
Glenberg,
coach in the Frontier League for the Schaumburg Boomers, actually. Played in the Boomers, or yeah, he coached in a Boomer Stadium.
He's a Glenbrook guy. Glenbrook, yeah. South. Grad.
And you know the White Sox love their local guys, right? But yeah, right? I mean, there's a reason to like this guy as well too. So
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I just feel like if there's any evidence that the White Sox have turned a corner on hirings, it happened last year with Will Benable. And now, you know, Will Venable was able to bring in some of his own guys last year. There was a handful of guys that the White Sox basically kind of forced on him by saying, you know, they're still under contract, so they're staying. And now those contracts are up this year and they weren't brought back, you know, i.e. Ethan Katz and Marcus Thames. Yeah, I mean, you're going to tell me that there wasn't at least homework done on this guy. And Will Venable bringing in his own people, I'm going to tell you, you're probably wrong. And I am going to give that hire the benefit of the doubt, regardless of him coming from, you know, wherever it may have been, right? I just feel like that's a hire that the White Sox have, you know, put some thought into, I believe. Yeah.
I trust what Venable has shown. I trust what Chris Getz has shown. I have no, there, you know, the first show we did last, whatever it was, March, first show, I was like, I'm a Chris Getz guy. And that has stayed true. He's done nothing to make me think that, you know, he doesn't know what he's doing. I have a ton of trust in Getz and Venable, and, we'll see what these guys do. I really like both hires though. I think they both make sense. That said, I remember when Pedro was hired, and a guy that, you know, I trust a lot, which was Cody Decker at the time. I worked on a show with him at the BetQL network when I was, you know, a tiny board op, but he loved Pedro. And then, you know, look how that turned out. So, you know, you can make all these statements before these guys do anything, but until the season's played, it's really hard to know what this is going to turn out into.
So Wolf Larson asks, what is Showman's philosophy? Is it the same as Fuller, more or less? I don't really know. I hadn't heard much about
contact first.
Yeah, that much I do know. He's pitch selection, yeah, pitch selection, yeah. Slash decision making at the plate. You know, I believe that's probably the two biggest attributes that I've heard about, but they're also saying that he's been able to draw some power out of some guys as well. So I'm not sure exactly, you know, what kind of philosophy we want to talk about here. I feel like he's a guy who's, again, he's an analytics driven, and he's very familiar with a lot of the new tech that's out there, especially some of the tech that the White Sox have now just starting to employ. And I believe he's probably going to be one of those guys who is going to be able to find individual programs for players that suit their game and their specific needs. Obviously you hope that you get that out of all your coaches, right? But I think the White Sox organization philosophy as a whole is going to be contact first, and really just trying to find more hitters' pitches and let the pitchers' pitches go by, which is all going to play a role in more on base percentage, more walks, seeing better pitches, which is going to drive up power numbers as well. So I'm all here for it. Hopefully we'll get a little bit more on his background over the next coming days or week or so here. And, you know, any updates that we get, we'll definitely hit you up with that. But I believe that that's going to be just an organizational philosophy, is we're going to be big on contact and big on approach at the plate.
Yeah, yet again, although their whole, like, change after the All-Star break was more aggressive on fastball. So there's a line to balance there. We'll see what that looks like.
All right. Well, and I think that just comes down to, I mean, I guess approach is and pitch selection is kind of a broad, very broad paint. It's painting with a broad brush, right? But ideally is knowing, you know, these guys are young. You know, we're seeing a lot more rookies and guys now coming up in their second year when we go into 2026. They came in with philosophies of, you know, they need to be aggressive in hitters counts is what it comes down to. And kind of knowing when to expect certain situations at the plate. And I think it was more of a free swinging philosophy for so many years. And that's why we're just seeing the differences now. So again, it's going to come down to how willing these guys are going to be to, you know, adapt to what the coaching staff wants them to do. And I think that's going to be a lot easier with a younger core of guys who haven't been run through the ringer with different managers and different coaching staffs and different GMs and different philosophies and being told that you're a superstar before you ever step on the big stage and being given a contract before you ever step on the big stage. I think that was, you know, at the time it seemed like a great plan for Rick Hahn. It kind of backfired on the White Sox as a whole. And I think now, like I said, there's just an organizational change in philosophy altogether. And we're going to get kind of back to the basics, I think.
100%.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points. Perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Let's see. One more question before we move on to Bove as the new pitching coach taking Ethan Katz's place. But Wolf Larson says that's glad to hear on that stuff. If they can get Colson in the 260 range, he'll be an all-star. Thoughts on that comment?
I think he'll be an all-star. I mean, regardless. What did he... I'm struggling with it. I know his average wasn't great last year, but like, and we'll talk about this a little bit later. I have some players I want to crap on.
I have my thoughts on this as well too, but I'll let you finish yours.
I just like average is cool. Don't get me wrong, but like if he can hit 200, but get on base at 300%, at 300 and you know, with the power that he has, that's more what I'm worried about.
I'd like to see what way over 300 on base percentage. I'm just saying.
Well, yeah. You get what I'm saying. I'm less worried about the batting average as I am the on base.
Yeah, WRC plus and all those things, OPS and OPS plus. I get it. I feel like they're better. There are better metrics to measure a hitter's value, but I'll give you my thoughts on this. If Colson Montgomery showed us anything in the second half about him being more comfortable at the plate, and we started to see it more in the last month of the season, he started walking more, and he was being more selective with his pitches, I believe that that's something we're going to see a huge jump in next season, because he's always been, throughout his entire professional career, he's always been a guy who has a great eye and makes solid contact and doesn't strike out a ton.
Yeah. No, really, but, like the – sorry, go ahead. I totally cut you off.
No, no. I was just going to say I believe his average is going to be probably well over 260 next year.
Yeah.
I would be – I'd actually predict that it might even be over 280 by the end of the year. And I expect him to have an on-base percentage that is more than respectable and probably a pretty high OPS too, as well, as long as the power continues to play the way it did the second half of the season. So that's my prediction. I'll even make that – I'll save that, or you know, regurgitate it later on at the end of the show as my hot take for this week's show. But I'm thinking that Colson's going to take probably a pretty big step this coming season, and I do believe he's got an opportunity to be an all-star.
Yeah, for me, like, the player that could use the most work here is Lenin Sosa. Like, the dude does not walk. He's got the worst walk rate, the worst chase rate. Like, everybody's talking about Lenin Sosa's defense. If he could walk at somewhat of a clip, his batting average was .264. His on base was .293. Like, if he can start walking and get his on base near like 350, he's a player that I watch with, you know, swing decisions and walk rate, stuff like that. That's who I'd be
interested
if he's still on the team.
Any idea what his clutch rate is? I haven't looked up I haven't looked at his Savant page in forever, but I would like to see what their clutch rating is on him.
I have Savant pulled up.
But it would be, I would say that even though he doesn't walk much, I feel like the guy came through in some really good situations. So, anywho. Well, while you're looking that up, I'm going to go ahead and shift gears a little bit here. Because I will stay on Sosa for a second. I agree. And then the question did come up in the chat as well, too. Do we think Sosa will be shopped? I don't think anybody's off the table besides Carroll and or Teal. Carroll might actually be on the table. I don't know. I don't know. I think Colson's probably the only guy that's 100% off the table on the entire team.
Yeah, Teal, Colson, I would say are the two players that I don't think could be traded. But
I'd hate to see Carroll go too, but I feel like he might. I mean, if you get a desperate team, you might be able to get a ginormous package for him. And I'll leave it at that. So, yeah.
I can't find clutch stats. I'm struggling.
Maybe it's not Savant. It might be somebody. Somebody's got it on one of their sliders. There's like a clutch metric or something somewhere.
Hold on. I think I have found it. Let me see. That doesn't seem right. Hold on.
This is
MLB.com has late / close. And Lenin had a .520 OPS, but that doesn't seem right.
Yeah, so. I don't know what that means. All right, anywho. Let's go ahead and move on to the new White Sox major league pitching coach, who is Mr. Bove, as we've mentioned. And, we might as well go ahead and jump right in. Give me your thoughts on this hire and how you feel about it.
Yeah, he's got an interesting background. Started as a hitting coach, yes, and then moved over to the pitching side. So I personally like that. I think it gives you a more variety in terms of you would kind of know, not to relate baseball to football for another time this show. But I mean, there's been a couple of those guys who've like, you know, for example, like Salo is in the Packers, like offensive rooms kind of learning. So I think analytically there's a lot to learn from that end. And I think that helps him. So I'll be interested to see with it. I understand that he's a Royals guy, but like the Royals staff has been good, top 10 in the ERA the last two seasons. So, yeah.
Yeah, they're great in whip. They're great in ERA. Yeah.
It was a really good pitching staff last year. I don't think there's any – should be any issue with that hire.
No, and again, so we've talked a little bit about this during this show, and I told you it would come back up. Analytics and biomechanics, which the Sox sound like they're leaning heavy on those two departments right now, right? Over the last couple of seasons. And this guy is known for both. He's known for being an analytical guy, and he's known for being a biomechanics guy. If we look at just this last season for the White Sox and the amount of injuries sustained to pitchers, and the amount of guys we got coming back from TJ and shoulder issues and lat issues this year, and guys that are going to be put on pitching limits and, you know, probably have to work their way back up. This is the type of guy that I think can help in every facet of keeping pitchers healthy and getting pitchers healthy and back to where they need to be. And I think that's a huge move for the White Sox. On top of, you know, his history of having a couple of seasons now under his belt with pitching staffs, like we said, who are in the top 10 or even better in a lot of pitching stats and categories as a team. So I think that's a big hire. I think, again, I heard a little something about, Getz and God, why am I drawing a blank? Our pitching coordinator for the organization. Bannister. Thank you. Wow. I have no idea why. Just a little bit of a brain fart there. I'm battling a double ear infection at the moment. Yeah. Yeah. Pain in my
ear infections suck.
Yeah. And a stingy one at that, like second round of antibiotics because the first one didn't work. Yeah. Tinnitus the whole night.
Been there, done that.
Yeah. It sucks.
I have chronic ear issues. So, yeah. Those suck.
I have chronic sinus issues, and I think that's what this stems from because I've always had ear problems as well. So, but anywho, not that that's an excuse, but for some reason, I just couldn't remember Bannister's name. But again, this was a guy who was given the job because of merits in his past, as well as interviewing well with the team and having the analytics and biomechanics under his belt. So I think it's huge. Do you have anything you want to add?
No, I love both these hires. I mean, again, I've said it before. We'll have to wait to see what the results look like. But I'm going to murder his last name, and I always do, and I always see the pronunciation guide, and I forget it every single time. Thames, when he was hired, I looked at him, and I was like, all right, that's a horrible hire. Like, you're hiring the Angels guy. Like, there's nothing there. But at least now with these two guys, I feel pretty confident that this should work out. Again, keyword there is should.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. And then the last thing I wanted to do was I wanted to find Merck. Merck put out a article earlier, and I cannot find it. Oh, boy.
There you go. Oh,
maybe we'll... Hang on. You might be able to find it here. Give me a second. Because I wanted to throw out a couple of quotes on that. I cannot find it. All right, never mind. I couldn't find it. I was going to quote him on a couple of things here, but I don't want to do that without the proper documentation in front of me, because I don't want to quote somebody and not be, you know, word for word verbatim. But yeah, I mean, I just think that all of these moves are a step in the right direction. We'll see what happens with the Lewis Robert Jr. thing, but you know, obviously the coaching hires are pretty good. Have you had an opportunity to look at the international market at all before we sign off? There's a couple of names. I know there's probably close to like 30 names that I think Morosi put out in this article that he put out earlier today. But there was a couple that
see, there's a couple of guys that are former MLBers that I am interested in. Obviously, that worked really well with Fetty. I'm trying to think of some of the names, but yeah, there's some players there.
Okay, I'm gonna pull up. I'm gonna pull up that one real quick. So, you know, he focused on the Asian market for postings in this article that came out this afternoon, and I'm just gonna kind of hit on a couple of the names that was on here. Kazuma Okamoto. So we've been talking about Munetaka Murakami for a while, right? And he's been kind of on a lot of fans' radar because the White Sox are in need of some more power, and he's a guy that can play first base. And, you know, since Andrew Vaughn has exited, we've had a bevy of first basemen come out, and none of them really did a whole lot, right? And then this whole the whole Elko thing, Elko now getting, you know, surgery that, you know, we thought he's probably been playing through for years and he's going to miss some time. I think it's even more of an issue now. Who's going to play first base? This is a big question, right, of the offseason. Who's going to play first base for the White Sox this year? Is it going to be, you know, are we going to see, you know, Sosa slide over? Are we going to see Miguel Vargas at first base? If Miguel Vargas plays first base, who's going to play third base? You know, there's a lot of questions in the corner infield positions for the White Sox. And that's why Murakami has been one of the big names in the international market that White Sox fans and, you know, the media in general have been talking about. But Kazuma Okamoto he's one of the Japan, he's like the NPB guys. Six-time All-Star. Now, he's a little bit older. I want to say he's like 28 as opposed to like Murakami being 26. But he's a six-time All-Star. He's had six straight seasons of at least 30 home runs. And let's see, what else he's got going on? His career high for a single season is 41. Now, the difference between him and Murakami is Okamoto is a right-handed batter. What do
it's
you?
Also better in the field.
There's the kicker. So Murakami is a strikeout machine the last couple of years, and is considered to be a poor defender. He's not even average. He's well below average defender.
Rafael Devers is the defender that comes to mind.
Yeah, for Murakami.
yeah. Like that's the type of defender he is.
Oh, so according to this, he's actually 29. So he's a little bit older, which to me means you can probably get him for a little bit cheaper, right? And I also feel like there might be less of a market for him. There might be a lot of names a lot of teams going after somebody else. Because, you know, obviously the Mets are probably going to be looking for a replacement. There's a few other teams where guys are seeking free agency, and I think they're probably going to go for the bigger guys. But so the thing about Okamoto is he missed some time with an elbow injury, but he came back in the second half after this elbow injury and still had over 1,000 OPS and hit, I think, 69 games. He still hit 15 home runs and under 300 plate appearances. So what are your thoughts on a right-handed batter? Are you okay with giving up the left-handed bat on the side of the plate for a little bit of a cheaper option and a guy who might be a better defender than what we're talking about the last couple weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I don't hate it. You know, I think there's, you know, obviously your right hand dominant right now in the lineup. And that's not going to get any better. But, yeah, I don't much mind the same hand. Oh, that's not going to work. That's just never going to come out in that right syllables. I don't mind it. I mean, if you could find a guy who's signable, I mean, there have been pretty scary quotes from Getz this year or this offseason about them not spending. So I don't know what that budget looks like, but, I mean, they're going to need a first baseman. There's legitimately not a first baseman on the team. Sosa and Vargas are currently your first baseman. So that's a definite need. We'll see how they address it. But, yeah, I don't mind them going over to the international market. Again, we'll see what happens. But, yeah, wouldn't hate either of them.
Oh, and by the way, I do want to point this out, too. He also plays third base. He's actually probably played more third base than he has first base. And for the White Sox, I believe this is something that they just seem to like the last couple of years, is guys that are able to play multiple positions and being able to move guys around on the field, which is fine for now, I guess, as we kind of figure things out and, you know, where this rebuild is going to take us. So, to a point where we're actually competitive and trying to find the finishing pieces, if you will. But it just seems to fit their philosophy to be able to have a guy who can play fairly decent defense at multiple positions. So just wanted to throw that out there. There's a few other names. I'm going to bring up another one here. Oh, by the way, his major league comps, Okamoto, Aramis Ramirez and Vinny Castilla. Not bad names to have attached to you. So,
certainly again, not.
But if you remember, he's the guy to hit the dinger to be the difference in the Japan's win over Team USA in the last World Baseball Classic in 23. So just something to keep in mind. So we got Murakami.
Hardly remember what I ate for dinner last night. Definitely don't remember anything from 2023.
A ton of pitchers on this list. We won't get into those right now. We've got questions in our own organization that we need answered before I believe we even think about international pitchers. But I'm going to go to one or two of the KBO guys that John Morosi listed here. And
Ponce was the name I was interested in. I don't know if that's who you're going to pull up, but
as far as what, pitchers?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Cody Ponce. Yeah, I think I could see him coming over. He's a KBO guy, right?
He's an Eric Fetty 2.0.
Right, and he's pitching in Korea, not Japan, correct?
Yes,
okay.
Correct.
Okay, that's I remember reading about. Oh, as a matter of fact, here he is now. I just scrolled right past his name. Let's see. Oh yeah, he's a guy they worked on getting him back. I guess he was in the bullpen for a while to get him back to being a starter. And the last couple of years, he was a league best 17-1. Posting an ERA of 189, which happens to be the lowest ERA in KBO, and 252 strikeouts. So not bad. But I want to focus on first baseman types right now, the corner infielders. We'll talk about the pitchers. Lewin Diaz, former Marlins first baseman. He went over to KBO a couple years ago and now has seemed to have found something. He's also 29 years old, so he's a little bit older, probably a little bit less competition for him. But he became the first American, or I should say import from the Americas to the KBO, to hit over 50 homers in the KBO this past year. So, I don't know. But there's a thought here that he's going to remain in the KBO because he'll probably make more money. So just something to think about there. I just wanted to throw his name out real quick. I don't want to spend too much time on it. And then there was one more I thought that I wanted to hit on. Oh, Lord, I can't find it now. I guess that's it. But, yeah, I just wanted to point out that there's a whole slew of guys coming over from the Asian market, or at least with a chance to come over from the Asian market if it makes sense for them to do so. Like I said to our listeners, if you guys get an opportunity to go check that out, John Morosi, like I said, put together a pretty good article on all those names, including all the pitchers from both Japan and Korea. You have anything you want to add tonight, Jake?
I don't think so. Other than, I wanted to hate on that one dude. Who did I want to hate on?
Oh yeah, let's go ahead and do that.
I know it was Jacob Wilson, but who's the writer?
I believe. Hang on, I have it here.
Jim Callis.
Jim Callis. Yeah, with his 25, he did like a grading on 25 rookies this season. And Jake wanted to talk a little bit about that, so I'll go ahead and give you the opportunity to do that.
All right, so here I talked about this earlier in the week, and I got fired up about it. I think it's going to happen again.
Dennis is asking if we can link that. I'll tell you what, Dennis, I will actually throw the link up on my personal Twitter page. Maybe Jake will do the same, and I'll send it 100%. Over to I'll send it over to our very own Ian as well to link up if he wants to share that on our Future Sox page. I'll leave that up to him, but I will definitely throw it up on my feed. So
if you don't know, Jim Callis is a MLB pipeline writer. He writes about prospects. Well, he ranked 40 players who will no longer be prospects on how he thinks they'll perform in the future. So this is not for rookie of the year. This is not how they'll perform in 25. This is how they will perform in the future. So clear example of this is Roman Anthony at 1, which I think is completely fair. I think Kurtz is 2. Jacob Wilson is 3. And 4 spots behind him is Colson Montgomery. That is insane to me. Jacob Wilson is a guy who is a negative defender, has little to no pop. He's a 13 home runs this year. His comparison is Luis Arraez. Not a horrible player, an okay player, but like purely
great contact hitter.
Yeah. That's his comp. Meanwhile, I think Colson Montgomery's nearest comp is Corey Seager. Like, that's a legit left-handed bat, great defense, like nuts
power. With the potential to actually be better than Corey Seager.
I'm not saying he's going to be Corey Seager, but like,
I think he can be better.
That's the... If you were going to compare him to one MLB player, Corey Seager's who comes to mind. They're the same age or similar. I think it's insane. And this is not – I'm not like hating on Jim Callis here. There are many people who are big on this whole Jacob Wilson's a better player and will be a better player than Colson Montgomery, and it is absolutely insane. All right, that's all I had to get off my chest. It was
– No, I'm in full agreement. And you know what, Jim Callis, I actually like his analysis most of the time, but that doesn't mean I agree with him 100% of the time either. I know our guys have actually spent some time with Jim Callis in the past, and he's well respected by the Future Sox guys here. But yeah, totally agree that I think he's
like I said,
he's muffed that one.
Yeah,
He's and in you case know you're what, I think I'm using the football terms because I have the Bears replay on in the background right now.
Gotta do it.
Which I don't know.
Also,
why.
No Shane like, Smith on that list, by the way. No Shane Smith. It wasn't a top 40 rookie. Insane. All right. I'm done.
No, all good. All good, all good. I think we'll wrap it up there. I gave you guys my hot take already. And I didn't pass it up, so there was one here in the chat that I'm gonna go back to. It was baseball toss.
Tebow was 11 tossed. Carroll was 26, I think. Taylor was 31. I want to say those are the Sox that were on it. Which I didn't. Oh, I'm on the wrong article. But yeah. So there was plenty of White Sox rep. Nope, that's not going to happen either.
Represented?
Representation. There it is.
Oh, plenty of White Sox representation on the list. Yes.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. So I gave you guys my hot take earlier in the show. I'm going to put baseball tosses up there. He gave it to us a little bit earlier, but said go ahead and share it at the end. So I will. He said my hot take for this episode is 3 of 4 of either Antonacci, Braden Montgomery, Hagen Smith, and Schultz break camp with the team. Thoughts on that real quick. Sam Antonacci, Braden Montgomery, Hagen disagree. Smith, and
Milton. I will say
you don't think 3 of 4?
One of those four will break camp. One.
Do you have a guess on who? Which one?
Noah would be my favorite.
I'm going to go with at least
Noah's two. Noah's at least pitching AAA.
I'm going to go with at least two. I think there's a you know what? You're right. I believe Antonacci is showing out in the fall league, right? in the Arizona league,
yes.
Right now. I mean, the guy he's basically the best player out there. And as Ian has so eloquently put, if it wasn't for a couple of White Sox guys on that team, the Desert Dawgs would probably be over in the win column right now, because they have actually the Dawgs have struggled mightily at times, and you know these White Sox hitters are generating some offense for them. So I do believe it hinges. I don't know if Antonacci cracks the opening day lineup, just because I think even with this performance, even if he has a huge spring, I think they want to see more out of him. Probably facing some good pitching in AAA before they bring him up. But we shall see how that goes. Montgomery, again, my opinion on him is he's probably going to get at least a couple of months in AAA next year, if not more, just because it's a small sample size, although he did skyrocket this year, moving across three levels. So, yeah, we'll see, man. We will definitely see. I think the pitchers have a better opportunity just because of the injuries and guys being limited. So, but yeah, pretty. That's a good hot take. What do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Ooh, Chicago as a whole from January 1st to December 31st, 2025, all the sports teams finish above 500.
Ooh,
White Sox might drag that down because there's a lot of losses there, but. If they win 70 games, book it.
Yeah, I'd be happy with 70 out of the Sox. I would be happier with more. If they continue to play like they did in the second half last year, I think there's a chance they can get close to 500.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're going to hit 500. We'll see how the rest of the offseason goes before we get into that. But, I mean, they were a lot of fun in the second half. It was a much easier watch. So, I'm good with that. All right, unless we've got anything else, man, I think we're going to put a bow on it and wrap it up right here.
I was trying to make a bow. It wasn't going to work.
All right. Thank you, Dennis, for the compliments.
Thank you, Dennis.
We appreciate it. I will definitely get those links put up to the Morosi article as well as Callis's article, I'll get those on my Twitter feed. If not tonight, it'll be early sometime tomorrow. So appreciate you. Thank you for checking in, Toss. We appreciate you. Uncle Ted, all you guys, man. Wolf, Ian, all you guys, much appreciated. Any of our listeners, we always appreciate you. As always, just remember that anytime any of our podcasts are live, super chats are open. So if you like the content, you want to you want to help us out with a little donation, by all means, we won't complain. If you don't want to spend any money and do that kind of thing, help us out. Smash that like button, subscribe, help the algos, keep us relative, get us that recognition in the algorithms. But, we appreciate that as well. So, if you guys like any of our written content, you can find that on, futuresocks.net. We have our exclusive stuff behind a Patreon paywall for only $2 a month. You guys can check that out. All of our other podcasts you can find there or any of the streaming services that you use. But you can find us every Wednesday night live. We appreciate you guys coming and checking us out. For my co-host, Jacob Thome at jthome21. I am Danny Miller at Danny Miller FS on X. You guys are always awesome. We appreciate you. We'll be back next Wednesday at 8 p.m. Central Time. And until then, as always, go White Sox.